Hi, this is Cheryl, and
this is Tony.
Welcome to Cat with Monocle. We're here today talking about Dune 2. Tony, it's my understanding that you have seen both of the movies, the first one and now the second one that we just left today. And you have also read the book. Do I have that right?
That is correct. I have read pretty much every one of Frank Herbert's and his son's books that are in that whole series.
Fantastic. How many books are there?
Oh, it's around 16 or so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a lot more than I thought. Good. Okay, so this movie was really hard for me to kind of explain what it's about other than very Star Wars-esque, where people are fighting to try to be leaders in the universe-ish. But that's a terrible, terrible description. So maybe you can do a little bit better.
So it is tough to narrow it down exactly which angle on it you want to take. But I think a pretty simple way of putting it was one person's struggle to avenge what wrongs were done to him. That's one layer, one way of putting it.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah, vengeance. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there was definitely a vengeance undertone in the movie that exists in the books as well. So that part was fine.
Okay, perfect, perfect. I appreciate you going into that a little bit because it was a lot to take in for this second one.
It's a long movie for sure. There's no question there.
I know in the first one, we had the movie's been out for a long time, so I'm sure this isn't going to be much of a spoiler, but I'll mention it anyway, just in case. Spoiler alerts. The main character, Paul, how do you say that last name?
Atreides.
Atreides, thank you. Yep. Paul Atreides, he's essentially the son of one of the leaders in...
Yeah, so if you want to make a sort of a synopsis of the world, the universe at this time, it's 10,000 years in the future. It is a future that is very feudal. It's a future feudal situation. Houses run basically whole planets. And so his father, the Duke, was the leader of a planet that produced things on this water-based world. It was like furs and that kind of stuff, other fish and things like that from the water world.
I don't think that was explained in the movie, was it? In the first one?
It's hinted a little bit at in the first one, I think. I'm not 100% sure if they mention it in the movie, but it is definitely mentioned in the books.
Okay.
So that's where that comes from. And it's not while it's both a weird sort of combination of futuristic and non-futuristic. So you see, you know, crazy suits that float and things that are floating around and people... you know, do things you wouldn't normally be able to do in the sort of world we're in right now. But then at the same time, like I said, it's a feudal society where you do not see a ton of particularly strong modern conveniences being thrown around.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I would say that you have a lot more detail and background because of the books, probably.
Sure, 100%. I
would say just, I feel like you have to have seen the first one.
Oh, yes.
In order to, it's definitely a continuation of the story.
1,000%. Yes.
It's essentially the son of this leader is the next in line, yes, essentially, sure, to be the leader, sure, of this planet, you said?
Sure.
Planet.
So, yeah. He is the father is given the position to replace the previous family that was running the planet Arrakis, the Doom, the name of the movie. And so, as they are given this opportunity, they also know it is a danger. Because they have this warring house thing going on with that other family that gets mentioned, which is the Harkonnens. the premise of the initial story was that they had to, you know, decide how could they do what the Emperor wants, take control over this place, but do it in a safe way, because it didn't make a lot of sense that the Emperor was putting them in that position.
Okay. Very good. And we know that in the first one, his dad is killed.
Yes.
That's where the spoiler is. So, yeah, that's where the vengeance comes in. I think you were doing a good job of preventing the spoiling. But that one came out a while ago.
That one is fundamental to the character. The story hasn't really started until his father dies, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And we know that his mom... is essentially what is she classified as?
She's a Bene Gesserit. So she is the simplest way of putting it is a space witch. But
seriously.
She is Bene Gesserit trained. And the way to think in this world is there's basically a bunch of factions, a bunch of what they call almost guilds. And the Bene Gesserit are one of the major power players, one of the major guilds in this future world.
Okay. And is that...
So she is also the consort of his father. She's never actually his wife. She's his consort.
But they do have love between each other.
Oh, absolutely. The only reason why he never married her was to keep that potential for a future marriage of power and convenience to do like that ability to do that. So he never marries her because they always wanted to keep that potential. And in fact, actually one of the things that are hinted at in the books, this is relatively minor, is that, you know, there was maybe even potential for him to maybe marry the daughter of the Emperor or something like that, you know.
Oh, interesting.
And step up in the world.
Fascinating. Okay, cool. And that was... Was that Rebecca Ferguson?
Yeah,
was
that's the mom? Rebecca Ferguson, yeah, the Lady Jessica.
Okay, perfect. Okay, and the Emperor, I was very surprised by this. I didn't know this going
Walken.
In.
Sure.
Christopher Walken.
The great Christopher Walken.
Great Christopher Walken.
I gotta be honest, he was highly underutilized in this movie.
He was. I was actually thinking that he was,
Christopher Walken.
Very vulnerable and weak.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was weak.
Well.
Even though he was the Emperor.
Right.
But I understand also, like, was that intentional?
No.
I can't tell.
I gotta be honest, he was, I think they pulled him in just for the name. He was too old for the role. The character.
Oh, geez.
It's honestly true. The character is Christopher Walken's age. But it's in a universe with the spice. And the spice, one of its special properties is it extends life. So he really should have been played by somebody about 30 years younger than the character. Or at least 20, but probably 30 years younger than the character they had there.
Oh, okay.
So he was definitely an older, you know, person, but it was not, you know, Christopher Walken's got to be in his 80s now. He's hitting that
Absolutely.
Frail point. And he was not supposed to come off as frail.
Yeah. And that's how he came off to me.
No, for sure.
That part I was a little bit disappointed in. I was hoping he would have some sort of like powerful like scene of some sort, even if he didn't, you know, even if mostly vulnerable, but some like Christopher Walken.
Right.
So I was a bit disappointed by that. Actually, you know what? Let's stop for a second. How would you rate this initially before we go into all the details?
So right now, it being only about 30 minutes or so since I just walked out of the theater, I'm going to give it a 4 at the moment. I know I am going to go up and down on this list. But,
oh, okay.
so my overall would be a 4. What would you give it?
I would say my initial reaction when first seeing it is a 4.5.
Okay.
I really liked it initially. As you know, this was the second time I've seen it in a week.
Well, yeah, the story, yeah.
And it wasn't as powerful the second time around, which was very interesting to me.
I'm actually extremely surprised by this story, by this statement, excuse me, because I felt the second movie here was way more powerful than the first.
The second time seeing this movie.
It is literally the second time you've seen Dune 2?
Yes.
I was not aware of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw it last week. Okay. I mentioned it to you.
No, but I misunderstood it. I thought you had just seen Dune 1 last week.
Yeah, that too.
Okay, then.
One on Monday and one on Tuesday.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Okay.
So that is fair enough. Is seeing it a second time.
But yeah, so I would still say my initial review is a 4.5.
Okay.
But I noticed some different things the second time around, which of course.
Sure. But this is one of my favorite things about the books. Every time I read them, I notice another thing I did not catch on the previous go around.
So you've read them more than once?
Oh, yes.
How
yes.
many times I've read have the, you read them?
I've probably read the original Dune about 8 times. Okay. When you go past that, it gets to be a lot fewer. Each further book you go along that line, you know, the quantity is fewer and fewer. But fair. I've seen up through God Emperor, which is read through God Emperor, probably at least 4 times.
And which book in the...
That's about the 4th one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair. Okay. So let's talk about some of the other characters besides the Emperor, Christopher Walken. We know that he was a little bit weak. How did you feel about Timothy Chalamet?
I think he did what he was hired to do. The role they gave him, he played it, I think, the way he was being told to play it. So he was a perfectly fine Paul. In that he did it the way, you know, he was told, directed, whatever, to act it. Do I think he made a good Paul versus, you know, where I would have liked to see Paul go? Not so much, but I thought he did as good as you could do with what he was likely given. You know, he followed, I think, the direction well.
Fair.
They just went some different routes.
Okay. All right. And for me, I would say that I really liked him as an actor. I haven't seen him in a lot of things.
No, he's still up and covered.
But apparently he was in Wonka, so
yeah.
But apparently he's known for Dune first, as you stated before.
I'm sure he had some small things or some other things.
Yeah, well. I have no doubt. But I thought he was a really good actor. I really liked his mannerisms were well delivered.
Yeah.
I thought some of the inflection in his voice as he was acting was really well done.
Yeah.
I really like those aspects. But I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. Any fault I have in the character is in the writing. It is not in his acting.
Fair. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anyone else that may have kind of stood out to you in some fashion?
To be honest, they kind of speed ran the character development. If you didn't already invest or with those characters from the first movie, you weren't going to get into them on the second movie. And whoever popped in after, come and gone. Couple of big point outs, I would say, was Fade Ralpha. The big reveal
besides
the Emperor was Fade Ralpha. Fade is the Baron's nephew.
Oh, okay. That's so played by Austin Butler.
Yeah, the Na Baron, as they refer to him in the movie. He is a very important character to the Baron and the Baron's plans. And you do get a feel for that in the movie, but unfortunately, the way they flip some things, I felt brought down his character. It did.
You're saying compared to the book?
I'm saying compared to the book.
Compared to the book.
Going to be stuck as a person who is a huge Dune fan and read so many of these books, even you know, seeing the older movies and all that stuff too. I can't help but compare to the book. It's just impossible for me. So I will say when I say that this is a 4 in my opinion, that is for somebody that is kind of looking at it as somebody coming in fresh, who's not. I'm taking my comparisons to the book and just for a moment sitting them to the side, and that's where I get that 4.
Fair.
If I bring the book in, it's a 2, maybe a 2.5, and an insult and a slap in my face too.
Oh, powerful words, people. As a novice and newbie, I put it as a 4.2. It was a 4.5.
What I would say was, and this is a frustration, I think many people who have enjoyed a book and said, oh, that would be great if they made a movie out of this. They made it and they weren't happy. They didn't trust the audience to just understand or appreciate. They said, oh, they won't get that. So an underlying theme in this book is religion. Like, religion is smattered throughout the Dune world. And religion is not used to mean that there's some sort of greater good. Religion is used because it has an effect on people. It makes people do things and follow things and act certain ways. It is used strategically in the Dune universe. And, you know, they do talk about that. They talk about it. But they went the extra steps to call out bad using that religion to manipulate people. You don't have to use religion to manipulate people. It's bad to do that. They didn't need to do that. Trust your audience to actually see what happens with this religion, what comes of it, and see those negatives and make the conclusion that, oh, maybe that wasn't a good thing. And they didn't trust us. And that's a lot of my frustration with the Chani character, because that's what they had her do. Chani, who is played by Zendaya, she's Paul's Jessica. There's a mirroring that happens between Leto and Jessica that happens between Paul and Chani. Chani becomes his consort. She never gets to become his wife because he marries a character. So
we think, we don't know for sure, because it's just implied that that might go that route. Sure.
So we're thoroughly in the spoiler parts now, but there is a mirroring that happens between those two characters.
I didn't even see that. That's really, really good.
Yeah. Well, they ruined it because Jessica always, she always supported the Duke. Whatever the Duke, felt was why, she was behind. She was always there for him. She supported him. She didn't say, it wasn't no matter what. There was definitely interaction and discussion and stuff. But she supported the Duke. And they had Charney so busy going religion bad that she never supported Paul. They I shouldn't say never. That's too strong. I take that back. But they wishy-washy her support
Chani
for Paul.
Yeah. Definitely did.
She supported him in his. She supported Paul. She did not support Muad'Dib. She did not support Mahdi, which is the religious figure that they, were playing him to be. And there's so much background and surrounding of that that they don't touch it in the movie, which I understand. It's you've got time constraints. You can't hit every little thing.
Yeah. This was two and a half hours, I think.
It had to be at least, if not three.
I think it was two and a half.
And they talk about it in the first movie. In the first movie, if you remember, when they first get to Arrakis, they're traveling from the space station where they land to the home that they're going to stay at. And she talks a little bit about him, or about the religious chanting that they're doing. And she tells them that they're calling him the Mahdi and all that stuff. And they hint at it a little bit here. But what you don't see in this movie is that whole religion was brought to them initially by the Bene Gesserit. The Bene Gesserit actually seeded religions on planets, so that if a Bene Gesserit was ever trapped there or stuck, they could play on that religion to keep themselves safe.
Hmm.
So throughout the universe, the Bene Gesserit have seeded planets with religions intentionally. They are manipulators of religion. That is part of what they do.
Now, I seem to recall a long, long time ago, you and I having a conversation about how the author created this world. I'm feeling it right now.
Sure.
In what you are saying.
Sure. And you get in the movie, and this is this is another one of those things that's a little bit true in the, reading the first book, you only see a small piece of that world. You don't, a lot of what I'm talking about, I know it because I've read further and I know that broader picture, but most of this little tidbits I'm dropping, yeah, that's all in the first book. It's not that hidden. It, you know, it's explained. And I felt like in the first movie they hinted at it, and then they beat you around the head with it, the sort of the anti-religion part of it in the second movie, which wasn't necessary. And they could have done more world building. They don't mention the Spacing Guild. It might get a brief mention. That's it. The Spacing Guild is huge in the Dune world. You ain't getting from one planet to another without the Spacing Guild.
Is that what the spice was for?
That's one of the things.
Spice is the resource that allowed them to travel?
Yes. So what spice does. So just the fundamental. And actually, you know what? That's it. Your unsureness of what spice does is another knock on that. This the reason for that too.
Like they explained it sort of right. Like briefly.
Spice is the most important resource in the universe.
They made that clear that it was the most important resource.
They told
resource.
Us that fact and gave us no evidence of it.
I guess.
Don't tell me, show me. They needed to show me why spice is important.
Yeah, and for me, I was like, okay, well, I know that for Paul, like, he's getting these visions. Is it some sort of psychedelic of some sort for some people?
It is.
Or is it just used for travel? Like, is it, like, they didn't explain it very much.
No, they didn't. And the key thing about spice for the average person is it essentially extends life. That's basically it.
Oh, okay.
And if you could imagine, if there was a drug that would get you another 200 years before you died, it would be the most valuable thing in the world. That's reasonable. That's essentially what the whole story of the second Avatar movie was. That was the whole premise of why they were doing what they were doing in that movie. It was they found a thing that would make people live longer. And that was what replaced unobtainium in the second Avatar movie. You know, it would be huge if you had something like that. And that's fundamentally at the core level why spice is important. The second level is it allows guild navigators to navigate space from one location to another. So that is how they plan the route to actually warp space and go from one planet to another.
Interesting. I thought it was like used to, like, I don't know, put in the ship or something, like gasoline, like fuel
yeah, sure,
or
sure,
something.
Sure, you would. You would. And what they don't make clear in here, because they don't really touch on that history of the universe, that bigger history, is, and this is part of why it's that feudal, you know, not super futuristic, but still futuristic future, is thinking machines are completely banned in this universe.
Oh, interesting. So that would mean like navigation.
There are no computers.
Interesting. Yeah, now that you mention it, there was nothing.
No, there are no computers in this world. Thinking machines are banned. So you can't build a computer to navigate you from point A to point B in space. To make the calculations of how planets have moved and things happen so that when you fold, because they're space folders.
I'm feeling so vulnerable at the thought of this. Oh, I rely on my GPS so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'd all be dead in like a month if the power went out. You know, so it's over with. But so that resource is super important in this future. And it's broken down into guilds, like I was saying. So you have the Bene Gesserit, you have the Spacing Guild. There's another one where you saw a character. It's actually, I don't even think he shows up any in this movie. Thufir Hawat. He's a Mentat. Mentats is another guild. That's actually what they've done in this future, because you can't have computers. We've trained people to think like a computer.
Interesting. That wasn't in this at all, was it?
It's in the first movie. They totally drop it in the second movie.
Oh, interesting.
So their main strategist is a guy named Thufir Hawat. And he's in the first movie. The attack happens and everything. You never see him again. In the books, he's actually captured by the Harkonnens, tricked, starts to work for him. There's a whole subplot with Thufir Hawat that's, you know, dropped for the movie. And I understand that. Like, again, you can only fit so much in.
I feel like this could be like many, many, many movies. Lots and lots.
100% about halfway through this, I'm like, all right, I see why they originally wanted to make this a three-parter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just don't think it probably wouldn't have had enough investment to make it that far. It had a rough enough time going from the first movie to the second movie.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. Okay. Let's talk about the music.
Okay, so now we're getting into the reason why I got that four. I thought the
got the four. Okay,
I thought the audio, the just the music, just generally the audio editing, all of that was effing amazing in the movie. Extremely good. I liked it in the first one. I liked it in the second one. I thought it was really good.
I didn't really notice it in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In the second one, especially so, the...
Think about something in that first one. Think about that scene when all the Sadokar are lined up. That's the dudes that were sitting there. They literally were sacrificing dudes. The blood were coming down. They were putting the paint on their heads. And it was before they were going off the battle. And they're doing those home chime things. That's what I'm talking about when I say the audio, especially in the theater. This is one I would definitely recommend seeing in the theater. That audio is powerful.
It was very powerful. It was intense. Yes. It was very loud.
Extremely intense.
Very loud. But I really like the audio. Like, they use some really deep tones some places that
resonate
just made
bones.
It made it that much more powerful.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would agree. The music was outstanding.
Yeah. The cinematography. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
The visuals, the books as well have a very heavy, obvious desert theme, right? Like, that's Dune. It's a desert planet. The visuals on that desert were wonderful. There's a beauty of the desert, and I think they do a relatively good job of capturing it. They could have went a little deeper. It is much broader. They didn't zoom into that low level of life in the desert.
They did a little bit.
They did a little bit. Very
a little bit.
A little bit.
Which was kind of cool. I was even like, aw.
Yeah. But there's a lot more that they could have done there. But still, nevertheless, it was, I don't want to make that a knock. It was absolutely something in their favor. The visuals were amazing. The CGI did the thing CGI needs to do, not be noticed. CGI is doing its job.
Riding the sandworms.
Oh. That was actually really cool. So
that was really cool.
I'm a big fan of how that was done visually in the 1980 Dune movie.
Okay.
And that's much more of the sandworm riding on top of the sand.
Okay.
And admittedly, in the books, I feel like that's closer to what gets described. But the effect they went for in this one was really cool. It did work. So that was a change, I would say, was actually for the positive.
Fantastic.
That was really cool how they did that.
Yeah. And I knew nothing about that going in. And when he had his one particular test, we won't go into it just because it was pretty cool. But I really like that scene when he was tested, that last test.
Yeah.
With the sandworm. And it was very powerful. And
they don't oversaturate you with the sandworms. So that
they
when you
don't.
Do
it was
see
a very
them,
small part.
Yeah. But so that means that when you do see them, they can have the powerful effect they're going for. Sandworms should be amazing when you see it, especially when you see it for the first time. But just in general, on the screen, when you first see a
they
sandworm, that
give you
a
lot of
scene.
Anticipation leading up to those as well. And not every time. You don't see it every time.
No, in fact, you really don't see them truly good until that later scene that happens.
They let you use your imagination.
Yes.
That's a really good point. So, cool. Okay, so... what did you think of the overall feel of the movie?
So it depends on how you mean feel.
Well, take it as you will.
Well, like I said, it should have done a little more. Or no, that's the wrong way to put it. It should have been a little lighter on what it was trying to get across to me. It beat me on the head a little too hard on it with it. There was one kind of random scene. I'll just say it was in black and white that came out of nowhere. And like, it slapped me across the face with what it was trying to tell me. And it was like, movie, I already understand this comparison. You don't need to hit me with it.
I kind of like the fact that they did a black and white scene though. That was kind of cool.
It would have fit if it made more context in the story. But
fair.
Contextually in the story, it made no sense. It was just randomly thrown at me.
All right.
So, yeah. Fair. But, the movie never, it didn't really ever get like what I would call boring. You know, it kept a pretty good pace throughout the movie.
It did. I would agree with that. I would say that the first one I felt was very slow, but it was it was trying to build the characters and set everything up and whatnot. And and what is it? Zendaya?
Zendaya.
Is that how you say it?
Zendaya, to my knowledge.
I thought it was Zendaya. Okay. Well, Shawnee. She was barely in the first one.
Yes.
Barely. And she was definitely in the second one. Yes.
She's definitely in the second
pretty, one. Pretty important role after Timothy and a few other characters. I would say that there was a few that were probably a little bit more important than her role. She was still smaller in the grand scheme of things, but she was necessary for the story. So, I mean, she's part of the prophecy.
So she's really only faintly part of the prophecy and how they played it here. And she's not really part of the prophecy that I remember in the book. She's like, she's very important to Paul. Okay.
And that's what I think. That's clear.
It is clear on his side.
I got so angry at him.
Not so much on hers. I didn't.
I got so angry at him at the end. Oh.
So, okay. Both times. You're going to have to say that for like the spoiler.
Spoiler. Yeah. Right? Well, we won't talk about it. I'm just saying I was so angry at him.
I want to hear this, but.
We'll wait until after we're off this. Okay. I would say definitely wasn't boring. I am not into the fighting action scene kind of thing. So for me, the second time around, I start to doze off with too much of that. And there was a lot of it.
There was a fair amount of it. One little frustration I'll point out though, it was all hand-to-hand combat.
Yes.
They had projectile weapons. Like, I don't understand why they had to make everything hand-to-hand combat.
Okay.
Like, they're shooting them with lasers, and they're running around with slightly long knives. Like, that did not make a lot of sense. They had projectile weapons in the story. Like, they did not need to do that for the movie, but...
I don't know. I would say, compared to other fight scenes, though, like, it was kind of different. They took it up a notch. Like, for example, when they were underneath that ship and running and...
Sure.
Like the helicopter bug looking thing was shooting at them. Whatever it's called. I don't know.
You're making me draw a blank on what they're called, but they have a very distinct
name. Well, if you can come up with a better descriptor. But I thought that scene was pretty cool. Like,
yes. Yeah. No, that was cool. You know, all the sand fighting scenes were in general cool. You know, desert fighting scenes, I should say. The Fremen were awesome in general. I did very much like the Fremen. They tried to make them more personable, I guess, friendly. Friendly might be a strong word, but they tried to make them more personable.
More human, maybe?
I guess I could see how that was what they were thinking when they were deciding it. But humans come in a very wide range. And the Fremen in the book, and I, again, I got to go back to the book, but the Fremen in the book are still very much human. They you know, but they're a very hard people.
Spock-like.
No, I would not say that. But the desert is a very hard place. And the desert makes a hard people. And that is actually one of the bigger themes of the whole Dune world, is how the ecology of the ecosystem of a place can affect the people. And the people affect the ecosystem of a place. That is one of the themes. They took a little bit of Arabic culture, which, don't get me wrong, is kind of what Frank Herbert had originally done. And they just showed some Arabic-y kind of desert culture, and they said, here you go. That's the Fremen. Which, you know, is fine, but they didn't make them unique. So that's where I wish they'd done a little more. But
okay, so they kind of used some of the our world as far as different cultures.
And the story is our world, but way in the future. It's not supposed to be a different, you know, they initially do come from Earth, but that gets touched on much further out in the books and stuff.
Not in movie two. Okay, perfect. Perfect. Is there anything else that that you would like to say about it?
So here's my final word overall on the
movie. And okay, then we're going to give it a final rating.
Okay.
Also.
A final rating. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, like after talking about some of these things.
Got you. Okay. So like I said, that's going to go up and down. But here's my final story, our statement about these movies. A, if you liked the first one, you absolutely should see the second one. I have no hesitation that if you enjoyed the first, you will enjoy the second. Secondly, if you are a fan of the books, forget about the books for a minute and try to just enjoy the visuals and the sound and sort of those other, just take in Dune, Arrakis, on the big screen with a high budget for the first time in 40 years. Okay.
IMAX if you can.
Yeah, sure. 100%. 100%. But overall, I think it was a entertaining movie.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I thought it was good, even though I'm not into super action-y kind of movies. I still really enjoyed it, especially after seeing the first one. I really like some of the concepts with having, I guess, powers, if you will, like foreseeing the future and things like that.
Just a quick statement I have to say on that. Yeah. Just understand, as it is a blessing, it is also a curse.
Fair. And actually, it was made clear in there that the good and the bad is stuff that you can see. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of foreshadowing some of the books in the future.
I hope they make more. All right. As much.
Even though you were huffing and puffing throughout that whole movie.
Absolutely. Because I am excited to see Dune on the big screen with a high budget. So even if they make some misses, that they're still going to get some hits. And so that's still, I still did enjoy it.
Fantastic. All right. Final review. Where would you land?
The more I talk about it, do I give it a boost or do I take it away? Talking about it makes me excited for the Dune universe. Again, makes me happy to see a Dune movie in existence. I'd give it a 4.25.
All right. And actually, that's actually where I was going to land as well after talking about it further. I didn't know some of the history and background that you do. And it sounds like they really could have done a lot more. And now that you mention the fact that they were really harping on religion bad, I'm not a religious person. And like, for me, I'm like, eh. Like, whatever. Knowing a little bit that you explained about the books and how it was an important piece and it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It just was.
Yes.
I like the concept of, trusting the audience. I really appreciate that perspective. And having seen it the second time, that music, I was able to see it from a different lens. And it was really powerful. So some things were up and some things were down. Sure. So I would land 4.25 as well. So, all right. So I appreciate you being here tonight, Tony. Thank you. This is Cheryl and
Tony.
Thank you for stopping in and listening about Dune 2. Have a good night.
Thanks.